And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The tide is high, heart of glass, call me. These hit songs catapulted Blondie to the top of the charts in the late 70s and early 80s, and now we're getting a true inside glimpse of what life was like inside the band. Frontwoman Debbie Harry has a new autobiography, Face It, and she joined us earlier to talk about it. Debbie Harry, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's great to be here. It's a beautiful day today.
It is a beautiful day, and you've got a beautiful new book out, your autobiography, your memoir, Face It. It's gorgeous to look at, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But in the book, you confide to the reader, really towards the end, that, quote, it was against my better judgment to do a memoir autobiography, but it seems appropriate at this time in my life to get it over and remember. So I want you to tell us about that, Debbie, about how you reached a point now where this was a project that you wanted to do.
Well, I sort of didn't, I worked my way through it, but I don't know if I was ever really convinced. I don't know if I am convinced now even, but I've done it, and I think it's probably, as I said in the book, the right thing at the right time. And I'm a firm believer in that.
Well, tell us a little bit about revisiting basically the entirety of your life and all of the ups and downs that you have experienced and the highs and lows. What was it, a variety of emotions for you?
Doing the book? Yes. I'm not one to walk down memory lane constantly. It's not like I get together with my friends and we talk about the good old days. I'd rather, you know, look for something new and enjoy the present. I'm not, you know, that's not my favorite cup of tea, as it were. It just seemed like, as I said, the right thing at the right time.
Was there any particular period in your life that was difficult to revisit for this project?
I think much of it was, you know, as I said, I'm not very comfortable, you know, living in the past. I'd much rather, you know, live in the moment, as it were, and, you know, think about future ideas. You know, I enjoy being creative and moving ahead, and that's always been sort of my favorite, my joy, so to speak.
The design of the book is really lovely, a beautiful picture of you and your sunglasses, and you include in several sections of the book a bunch of fan art, and I thought that was really cool, and I imagine that a successful music star like you must receive countless pieces of such art, and I'd like you to tell us why they're so special to you and why you decided to put those in the book.
Well, first of all, I've been saving them for many, many years. They aren't, many of them are not signed or dated, but I've been collecting them for a very, very long time. And it's always fascinating to me that, the old saying, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and how they interpret, you know, who you are and what you look like, and also the sweetness of a gift, you know, from a total stranger, you know, that sat down and actually spent some time, you know, thinking about you and trying to create this image, and quite possibly would be, you know, listening to my music simultaneously. So I just was intrigued by this whole process and thought that, you know, I should take advantage of this collection that I've been, you know, gathering all these years and, you know, include it in the book. And I think it's a testament to, you know, the people that are affected by music and by what I do.
You write in the book about the fan art that you got, and they've not just survived the years, they've survived some near misses, maybe water, or I mean, you had an apartment that was just a couple of blocks from the World Trade Center when 9/11 happened as well, right?
Well, my partner Chris was living below Canal Street. Yes, not very far, about six blocks from the Trade Center, and that was quite devastating. But you know, somehow or other, these little pieces of paper and, you know, other materials, some were, you know, painted on canvas or hard surface. Somehow or other, these things have survived. So I feel like, you know, my life and my career are a testament to survival, as most of our lives are some kind of survival. The fan art is also significant in that it has survived as much as possible. I think, sadly, that, you know, there are some pieces that are not represented and that, you know, have, you know, been lost along the way, you know, damaged or destroyed or just simply lost. But, you know, as in the book, you know, there's quite a nice selection of the art.
There is indeed, all throughout, and it's really, really cool to see that in there. One section of the book that I particularly enjoyed was this period, I believe it was around 1982, when your band, Blondie, it seems like you had taken a little bit of time off. Everyone had kind of gone off and done their own thing for a period. You hosted Saturday Night Live with Chris, I believe you wrote, and that sounded cool. But you were getting back together to put together the sixth album that Blondie put out, Hunter. And you give us an inside look into what you call the democratic ideals of the group and how that ended up being a problem for the band. I was wondering if you would tell our listeners a little bit about how extending sort of equality to everyone within the group ended up being to your detriment.
Well, I don't know that it really was. I think theoretically it's better to have a leader, and it's a lot easier. I didn't mean that it was the detriment. It's more difficult, that's all, when you have to consider everyone's opinions and everyone's, you know, creative instinct. And you have to, you know, sort of be flexible. And, you know, sometimes people are not flexible. And, you know, especially when it comes to ideas, you know, and when you feel strongly about an idea, you know, it's just more difficult to convince everyone to give way a little bit, or, you know, to accept someone else's ideas and to, you know, move ahead. It's just more complicated, that's all.
So Debbie, I'd like you to expand on that a little bit, if you wouldn't mind, about how a band that's first starting out and seeking fame and then finds it and finds themselves in a position where the decisions they make have such higher stakes, about how that democratic process among the group evolves over that period.
I think mostly it comes down to good management, you know, having a manager who really knows about the business and is able to deal with different personalities and, you know, create a situation that everybody can live with. So that is not necessarily down to a band. That's probably down to management.
I did notice in an interview that you gave recently, you were just asked the question, what's the best career advice you'd ever gotten? And you said, get proper legal representation as soon as possible. So I imagine that's related to what you're talking about here.
Definitely.
Yeah, for sure. Also around that period of 1982, your partner Chris was hospitalized. He had faced a pretty serious illness and was in there for a long time, and you were able to keep his spirits up by supplying heroin to him during your visits to the hospital. And can you talk about your experience with drugs in that period, the impact that it had?
Well, I'm not an expert, and you know, times have changed, and now it's opioids And I think we were trying to deal with a very scary, life-threatening disease and period in our lives. And the heroin was, in many ways, some kind of self-medication. And I mean, I don't regret anything like that. I mean, I have regrets of, you know, stupidity and stupid things that I've done. But I think that, in a way, that was the right thing at the right time, once again. And it just made our lives a little bit more comfortable, as well as uncomfortable, but it also made our lives a little bit easier.
That period was also significant in music because John Lennon had been murdered, and you had a song on that album that you put out that Chris had written, a tribute to the Beatles, called The English Boys. And you said that John Lennon's death really had a strong impact on...
I think it did, yeah. I think it had a strong impact worldwide. And it's, I don't know significantly if it was the beginnings of the idea of, you know, gun control, but it certainly is significant in the idea of having more scrutiny over, you know, licensing a weapon.
When you look back on all the music and all the great songs that you've been able to put out, and as you were finding the words to describe the experiences for the book, Face It, what would you say was your favorite moment during your career?
Oh, that's impossible to say. I think one of them, oddly enough, was the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And, you know, Seymour Stein was one of the founders of the institution of the Hall of Fame. And so I had known Seymour for many years, and it was actually signed to him, one of his labels, for my solo projects. And, you know, he's quite a hero in the industry. But anyway, just, you know, it was a very exciting night for all of us. And I think in particular, Clem Sundberg was overjoyed to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And it really elevated Blondie into more out of a cold status and into a more legitimate view in the business.
You talked about how you enjoy living in the moment more than reflecting on the past, even though you do reflect on the past so well in your new book, Face It. But let's talk about the present. What are you enjoying about life now?
Pretty much everything. I've learned a lot and I've experienced a lot, and I've been very, very fortunate. I've had a lot of misfortune as well. But to be a survivor and to have achieved some satisfaction as an artist, I don't think there's much more that I could want, you know.
And I also read in a recent interview you were asked about who you admire most, and it wasn't somebody in the music business, but it was someone from entertainment. It was Oprah Winfrey, and you said you think Oprah should be president.
I did, didn't I? Well, I mean, think about it. You know, she's, you know, a representative of a very strong but visible minority of people in this country, and she would inspire them. Women, black women, black men. I think she's been a representative for gay people. And she's a smart businesswoman. I can't think of, I mean, my God, she came from nowhere and has achieved huge success as a businesswoman. And she knows how to talk to people. And I don't think that she would actually want to be president. but I could see how she could be.
There's a story in your book that's gotten some media attention in the profiles about your memoir, Face It, and it's how you talk about escaping the serial killer, Ted Bundy. And, you know, there's a lot of interest here in the Cincinnati area about him simply because the recent movie starring Zac Efron about him was shot in our area. So people were very interested in that film and a lot of people watched it. And it just it struck us all as strange here in the newsroom that you came so close to him. Would you mind sharing a little bit of that story with us?
As written in the book, exactly. I've been debunked about it, but I still hold on to my claim, where it's not really a very nice claim. But I also read somewhere that there was another woman in Colorado or Nevada that, you know, also escaped from him. And I'm trying to remember her name. I think it was Carol something. So it just was very unpleasant.
Yeah. And it's a story that you'd shared before, but like you said, some people have disputed it, but you stand by that and you talk about how scary it was.
Yeah. I don't recommend it.
One thing that our listeners of this program, Cincinnati Edition on WVXU, really find a great interest in is beekeeping. And I know that you love bees and you have concerns for the declining bee population. And what drew you to that?
I became educated about it. I listen to people. I like nature programs. I am a bit of an environmentalist as I, you know, witness more and more degradation of our environment. I feel responsibility, and I like to do as much as I can. So with the advent of the pollinator album, the collection that we did 2 years ago, I guess, it just seemed like totally appropriate to dedicate some of the monies that we were making to, you know, helping organizations that are, you know, working to save the bees. And I think primarily just to, you know, when something is on your mind, your tendency is to do something about it. And so, you know, talking about it, and also for me and for the band, having a purpose besides doing what we do to, you know, sell our music, having an altruistic kind of purpose was a terrific feeling.
Well, one thing that's always been interesting about you, of course, is your great sense of fashion. Your style is very much your own. And I'm wondering if you can just tell us a little bit about how that developed for you and how you created this style that is something that can be so identified with you.
I don't know. I think in a way that's a bit of a misconception. I am not really a chic person. I have a comfort zone, and I sort of know what looks good on me most of the time. I do make mistakes, but I've gotten a little bit better over the years. But I'm playful, you know. I like to be a little bit playful with it, and I like color. And I have friends that are designers, so you know, it's in sort of a natural attraction. I don't consider myself a real girly girl, but I'm a feminist, and I enjoy, you know, looking good and dressing up. Also, it's a big part of my occupation as an entertainer.
And there's no disputing that you are an iconic entertainer and a legend in the music business. Debbie Harry, the lead singer of the band Blondie, her new memoir autobiography is called Face It. Debbie, thanks so much for taking some time to talk to us here in Cincinnati.
Oh, you're entirely welcome. I really enjoyed speaking with you, and I guess you can enjoy the rest of your day.
I hope you enjoy the rest of your day, too. Thanks so much for taking some time. Face It is now available at booksellers. The story behind how a fortified northern Kentucky protected Cincinnati from Confederate invaders is part of a new documentary. This is Cincinnati Edition, a 91.7 WVXU. And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.